Hey friends, so we're back with this week's little
drash,
a little combo about the portion of scripture we're reading. This happens to be the beginning of Leviticus, which we decided to dive in right in the
Vayikra.
The beginning of the heavy. So if you don't know, Leviticus is full of laws and kind of minutiae almost, mitzvot, the blessings, the acts of goodness and obedience that we can choose to participate in. And we start out with the sacrificial system.
We're continuing to develop a society, a culture, a community mm-hmm. that has only essentially known Egyptian society. So
right. Well, so that actually leads me to, we had a little bit of a conversation about sacrifice on our way home from the mountains just this morning. Mm-hmm. And we're going to maybe skip some of that because it's, still undecided. A lot of this is just we're figuring it out. And I think maybe we should be clear about, I don't think that we feel like we have any of the right answers or all the answers or anything. I think that's part of the joy of the journey is just, the back and the forth. And that's the goal of this little adventure is to just to have the conversations.
Yeah.
Caring is more than half the battle.
Right. And we'd love to have the conversation with you if you're listening to this and you're hey, I got some ideas. We're open to those ideas.
And we're also very open to not agreeing all the time, which I think is a hard place to get if you're used to coming to one solid conclusion. So if that's what you're looking for here, then...
There's no solid conclusions.
No. We're just being open. So anyway, I think that going back to the beginning is valuable because one of the first things that comes to mind is, thinking about when Moses came down the mountain with the two new tablets.
The second set.
One of the big questions is, what was on the first set? And do I know or think that the sacrificial system was on the first set? Because I think one of the things that we talked about last time with the, the golden calf and everything was if the golden calf hadn't been there when Moses got down the mountain, how would things have been different? And was the temple, which is really what we talked about last time, the people clearly wanted something tangible to have and look at and participate with. And did God create that space because people needed it or because he wanted it?
So that brings up another question of doesn't God tell Moses that he needs to get down the mountain because people are acting stupid?
I don't remember.
I think he does.
He's
was it concluded quickly? God's hold on. And gets it done. And he's all right, get down there. Because I'm going to have to kill them all.
Well, it's such a living experience. I think a lot of times we tend to think of God as this set in, literally set in stone, unchanging. And there is, I think, elements of him that are unchanging for sure. But I think also that he's very much alive, in my experience. And I don't know, relational, it's easier to have a relation with someone who is shifting and changing too, right? You have one person who is what they were when they were five. It's not a very interesting relationship, right? I think it's just one of these things where somehow he changes and doesn't change all at the same time.
Well, the attributes of slow to anger, merciful, all of those are throughout the journey of the Israelites, you see over
and over. You can't be merciful if you're unchanging.
Right. Moshe.
Mercy implies. Yeah.
Moshe, on quite a few accounts, I'm sure somebody has figured out exactly how many, but changes God's mind or persuades God to do differently than what God's, mm-hmm. God is quick to anger sometimes. And Moses is that's not cool. Yeah. You can't do that. Or even Abraham is let's reason about Sodom and Gomorrah. Surely you don't want to kill everybody. And God's you're right. I don't mm-hmm. show me some righteous people and I won't have to. Mm-hmm. So to me, that makes a stronger opportunity for a relationship with the creator of the universe than, like you said, something that's set in stone.
One-sided.
There's no opportunity to reason, no opportunity to within Jewish culture too, it's okay to say to God, I'm not happy with you. I'm not happy with what's going on. Mm-hmm. that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And,
Anyway, so why the hefty part of this chapter is really about the sacrificial systems. And in my mind, I'm okay, so is that something that God needs us to do? Or is that something he created and developed because he knew we needed it to happen? We needed that. you know, just in the same way that he had us design the temple, was that something that he saw we needed? You know, it's an interesting thing. Like, does he need our sacrifices? I think there are places
where I'm pretty sure. Yeah. No. I was going to say there's quite a, in the prophets.
Yeah.
God says, like,
meaningless.
I don't like your, yeah. Like, if your intention, it's the same old, same old. Like, if your intentions are bad, don't bring me these offerings.
Well, so then what is the point of a sacrifice?
And I think you're onto it with the, or maybe this isn't where you're going, but my thought on it is that the offerings were not a distraction, but a slight turn away from Egyptian sacrifices. So these people have been raised and growing up. So it's
a counterpart for a culture that they were doing in a pagan way.
Yeah, it's a answer to like, okay, you already have these practices and you're used to this. Like, let's refocus. Maybe
so you're saying if they hadn't lived in a pagan culture and this is Egyptian culture, they wouldn't, there would be no call to sacrifices?
Maybe. I don't know.
So then I guess that brings me to like common day where I'm like, okay, what are the sacrifices that we make that aren't like holy sacrifices, but that we do make maybe without even in thinking about it? I don't know. Like I always want to compare, okay, what's the modern version
of
that?
Well, so like, and I'm going to use semantics on this, of course. offerings, like rabbinically speaking, the prayers three times a day are to replace the sacrifices.
Well, so in my mind, that would be time. You know, like you're putting your place, you're taking time and that you're taking a piece of your time and you're giving that as an offering.
Well, no, I think you I think you would say if you're taking your time, you're making a sacrifice. I'm saying that you're praising the creator of the universe and pausing and refocusing and in that effort making an offering.
Okay, so semantically speaking, I'm not sure we can even accurately do that because there's so much like depth to the Hebrew language that
right.
I don't know that we can actually pull that apart. But it is
like it's really got me thinking
I know. That was a lot of our conversation today already. But what I was gonna like just kind of come to as I was reading in our Nachman commentary, and I like this, so I just thought I would bring it up, but it says, a person sins due to the lack of da'at, which I'm not going to try to translate that because I don't even know what it means. But as our sages teach, a person sins only because a spirit of foolishness overcame him. To rectify this constricted da'at, the offender must bring in an animal sacrifice reflecting the fact that animals lack da'at. So I think da'at is actually translated as like free will, as ability to choose. So in this way, he shows that he is ready to sacrifice his animalistic tendencies. So the Torah reiterates, Mekem min ha-behema, from you, from the animal, because the sacrifice must be from the animal within, from one's base characteristics. So if you bring a sacrifice from the animal, you merit to be classified as a man. And what, like, the image of that
it translates as knowledge.
Ooh, knowledge.
Thank from you. Dot in the Sefirot of Kabbalah.
Okay. You just said more words that people don't know.
Picture that Kabbalistic tree.
The tree of life.
One of the little circles in it is Da'at, which is one of the attributes of the creator of the universe.
But also humans.
And humans also. Yeah.
So we can get into Kabbalah a different day. But that's like Jewish mysticism, right? But this idea of taking the animal and bringing it as a sacrifice and burning it, to me, was like, oh, I'm taking that animal part of me, the animalistic part of me, and bringing it, offering it, and literally burning it and saying, I'm here making this choice to be here in the presence of that, destroying that element of me in order to create a holy place, a place where that animal part of me is gone and it's just me and the divine part of me, the knowing part of me, standing here before God. And that, like, I don't know, when I read that, it was like an aha moment.
So kind of like your soul.
Yeah, like it's like a clearing of the animalistic part of us, which is like the need for meat, the need, like decisions we have every day.
Yeah, to me, it sends off alarm bells because I think a lot in our society, people say humans aren't part of nature or humans aren't
a separate thing.
Animals, which essentially, I believe that humans are animals. We do have a spirit, and in this case, da'at, or a soul that knows right from wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, yeah. I think being a part of nature, I don't think it makes you separate. I think it makes you a not equal, which I don't think we're equal with animals, right? Like, so a human life and an animal life, they're not equivalent.
I don't know.
You don't agree?
No.
So a cow and a human, you think are equivalent both have valuable, in the sight of, even in the eyes of God, they have equal weight or value.
Maybe. Why would they not? Because they're both creation from God.
Yes, but he breathed life into us and knowledge into us. And that makes us have, again, dominion over animals. Now, what we do with that dominion says a lot about us. And if we're men handling those animals in a like negative way, that's not what I don't think that we're at liberty to make that choice. We have knowledge. We should be making wise choices and stewards of peace and goodness. But I don't think that God expects the animals to pray or to offer sacrifices or to make a choice.
I've heard some argue that they don't have to pray because they're always connected with the divine. Like trees are another example. Like, right. If we want to go down this really crazy. Right,
but that's even the difference, is that we have a choice. Do we want to connect or don't we? And animals don't.
They're just,
But that's what makes humans humans, and why I think our offering's bigger and more exciting is because we are making a choice. It is a choice, right? Like, it's not as meaningful if you don't have a choice. And isn't that the point? Isn't that why God did separate us from the rest of the animal kingdom?
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, those were my thoughts on this particular. Yeah. That stood out to me because I'd never heard anyone really describe it that way, that the point of the sacrifice isn't for God to be pleased, but for humans to have a space to come to terms with that not being an animal and to create, just like with the temple, to create a place of holiness that they can then really be in tune with that divine connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to remove the animal aspect.
Because like you're saying, I don't think animals need that.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's so much more to like the sacrificial system that I don't know. The word, I think now Drew and I need to go on a word study in the what's a sacrifice versus what's an offering.
That's for a later date.
We're going to have to get some other rabbis involved.
Right. So for our viewers / listeners, what is the difference for you between a sacrifice and an offering? Put it in the comments.
I think it's a really...
Send it to us in an email.
Oh.
Tag us on social.
Even think about gift giving, you know, and like the like
is that obligation. A sacrifice or an offering? Because I feel like when you go to a kid's birthday party, that's a sacrifice.
Depends on if you're the
You're like, kid. Go out and get some Legos. And you're like, oh my gosh, Legos are so
well,
much.
Well, this day and age too, you go and like... At some of these extravagant birthday parties, you go and you bring a gift and then you also expect to leave with something. And, you know, I know that I've heard kids leaving parties like, where's our consolation gift?
Gift for coming.
Right. Yeah. And oh, man, that's just – do we do offerings because we expect some kind of a return? Like, why are we doing them? And isn't that ultimately, like, the point of it all? Like you were saying from the get-go, like – God doesn't happy with the sacrifice just for the sake of it.
Right.
You know.
Well, like you're saying, an offering is required for us to find a space where we can connect with the divine.
Mm.
Let us know what you think in the comments. That's it for today, guys. Thanks.